Hi, welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast. Sitting next to me, but not close enough to me, is Will Hines.
And sitting physically in proximity, but emotionally far away, is John Frusciante.
And with us, as always, is our podcast intern.
Hello.
Cypha Sounds. Applied for a promotion, was denied.
Was denied, yeah. Tried to move up, but he's still a podcast intern. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go around you guys.
No, it's okay.
Well, it's okay. You know, it's noted in your file.
And then the intern off mic, Keaton Patty.
That's right.
Who we could be making up.
You could never know.
But
Sorry. Intern.
Right, thank you.
Yes. What did you call him?
I said intern.
Oh, interns, intern.
Yeah. Interns. You got to get the possessive S to make that shit grammatically right. Thank you, Cypha.
That's all I got.
No, it's good.
That's all I got.
I like grammatically being correct.
I saw Keaton do an improv show this past week.
In what context?
What group? What was the name of that group that you sat in with? Everyone's Fat. He sat in with a group called Everyone's Fat. And he was great. He's very funny. Made some good moves.
Good job,
Keaton. Moving up on this podcast, Keaton.
Yeah, somebody's advancing. Not Cypha and not us.
I got my eye on that Keaton Patty kid. Chomp, chomp, chomp on my imaginary cigar. And this week's guest is Jeff Garlock.
Hello.
Hello, Jeff.
Jeff is a longtime writer and performer at the UCB Theater.
That's correct.
Regular, a Mod Night stalwart.
Yeah.
I was.
You were on Mod Night for like 17 years, isn't that right?
It was like 18 and three quarters. five years and 3 months.
That's right.
Yeah. And he has written shows at theater. He teaches. Mm-hmm. And he has a rich history outside of this theater that we will get into.
Oh, brother.
So let's get this out of the way first. What mod teams were you on?
Yeah, what's your little UCB resume bio?
So actual teams I was on. The first team I was on was iBadger.
Mm-hmm.
That was
one of the first
one
four.
Of the first four. The original four. Mm-hmm. The UCB four is the term that I used.
We should talk about what that term means.
That I own it? Yeah, great. So I was on iBadger, and then I was on the Skunts.
Mm-hmm. We were on the Skunts together.
Yep. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. where we met. Officially the worst named team maybe ever.
Yep.
And then Slow Burn.
Names than that.
The Skunts.
But it's up there.
Rough.
It's
close to one of my least liked words. And then Slow Burn, and then I ended on Neighbor Boy.
Uh-huh.
Were my teams.
So you were not on Gramps at any point?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, got that out of the way.
Screw
early.
That team.
I figured we'd get it. Get it out of the way early.
We say Gramps in every episode.
I know.
You do?
I've listened to every episode.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't even listened to any of these.
Well, I guess I've got a better track record than
you. Is this online somewhere, this podcast?
Not that I know of. As I know, we do it and Cypha like brings it home and puts it in a mason jar and that's the end of it.
I'll pickle this for another season.
And I'm picturing not like a file or a hard drive, but like the sound manifests as a liquid and he stores the liquid in a mason jar. That Cypha's like
Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter. I watched it again last night.
You have a much brighter, much cheerier imagination than I do, because I was picturing bringing them manifested as like fetuses or when you go to like freak shows and they have like little animals
weird
or
frogs
like, yeah.
dipped in formaldehyde.
Yeah.
Like that Tekashi Miike movie. Guys, I keep going with horror references.
Weird horror reference for every...
Your Tumblr, Garlock, for a long time for me was just like a list of bands that I'd never heard of and movies that I had thought were jokes, but then apparently were real things.
Surprise.
Yeah.
That's my whole life.
Especially the band name. The band names, to me, I literally thought you were making up for maybe a year and a half.
Sure.
Because I'd never heard of any of them.
Sure. Who wants to accept that there's a band called Prostitute Disfigurement?
Right.
Not me.
And that they're a terrible death metal band that I own probably four of their records. Oops.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's bad.
So, let's talk about
well,
that.
Well, it sounds like a joke.
Yeah.
Prostitute Disfigurement sounds like if I got labeled as being in a death metal band in like an improv scene.
Right.
That's a on purpose ridiculous name I would come
and
up with.
And that the one metal fan in the class would be like, ugh, that's the fake name you came up with? Well, they did it in real life.
Yeah.
Good for them, German death metal.
Let's talk about that for a little bit because tell you a little fun story about Garlock and I. I knew Garlock like he said from the Skunts, that terrible mod name.
Terribly named.
Terribly named.
Terribly named. Great team.
Jeff and I are both punk rock fans, mm-hmm. punk music fans, and I was a big fan of the band Orchid, and I used to, when I was on Harold Night, I used to listen to Orchid to get psyched up for Harold Night, and one night, after Garlock and I had known each other for a while, he was giving me a ride home, as we lived near each other, still do live near each other, and I had mentioned like how I use Orchid to pump me up for Harold Night, and you said, yeah, well, you know, it was a lot of fun playing those songs too. And I was like, wait a minute, what? I just, for some reason, had no idea that Jeff had been in Orchid. I hadn't put two and two together.
Surprise.
Yeah.
I was in Orchid.
Right. So that sort of segues into, you played in bands and you played a lot of music before you came to UCB, and you still do.
Yeah. I started playing music in high school, and that's kind of what I did with most of my time. Mm-hmm. I did acting in high school. I went to CCY, which is the Center for Creative Youth, which was a summer program where I did acting.
And where was this?
At Wesleyan.
Okay.
And then I would always do plays. We did one-act plays where it would always be the singer of Orchid would direct it, and I would be the actor in it, and we won most years. I was in, like, all, you know, The Crucible, and I would be any old crank character. And then my senior year of high school, I went to ECA, which was the Educational Center for the Arts, which was a kind of magnet deal for acting.
Okay.
Where I would go there half of the day and act. But while I was also doing that, I played music, and once I started going to punk shows and then really got into hardcore, and then that's kind of what I did with my time. I didn't go to parties and I didn't hang out with people except for my friends and play shows. Mm-hmm. With Switch Stance, which was my high school hardcore band. And then that slowly became this band All I Ask that went through college, and that became this band These Last Days, and then that turned into me joining Orchid, which was the singer's, my oldest friend's band, which was my senior year of college, mm-hmm. where I would drive to Amherst area half the week to play and record. Mm-hmm. And then we went on tour, and then I started a band called Panthers and was in Panthers for like 6 years. And, Orchid put out a lot of records. Panthers put out, you know, two or three full lengths, couple EPs. But that's what I did. And I never did comedy. I always wanted to do comedy. Mm-hmm. I did film in college. But I had no interest in improv. I had no interest in doing a sketch group. Slow Children at Play, which still exists from BU, was the team. And I was like, fuck that. I'm a hardcore kid.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. I was a hardcore kid. And I was like, I'm going to be a hardcore kid for the rest of my life. I kind of, you know, get very comfortable in what I do.
It sounds like you were full in for a long, long time.
Yeah. And I was. And I didn't, you know, like I said, I'm a real creature of comfort. So I like never thought about, like, I grew up on watching SNL and SCTV and Kids in the Hall and was obsessed with comedy and stand up, but never thought that this was something I did. So when I did film school, it really was just like everything was a sketch, but I didn't know it. And when I went to did acting, I would try to turn every Shakespeare monologue into a joke. I was full in. I was full in like a hardcore kid. And then I was just like, this is what I'm going to do, play in hardcore bands for no one for the rest of my life.
Wow.
So how did that, when and how did that change, do you think?
I always kind of watch UCB and would think about going to a show. But then again, I'm like such a creature of comfort. I was just like, well, I don't want to get out of going to shows, hardcore shows. So I'd never went to UCB until, you know, kind of the, you know, the normal story of like 9/11 happened. And then I was like, I should get going on doing other things.
Really?
But it still took me like...
That, by the way, is... We've never heard that story.
Yeah, it's... Well, I'm the first. Again, that's marketed by...
Yeah. Yeah, you say that as if, like, that's... I know it's a common thing that people... That happened
to... It's a life event of people in the world, in America, right. And New York. Mm-hmm. Right. Not, we haven't heard it in terms of that's how I got into UCB.
Oh, okay.
9/11 happened, and then I started going to show. That's never right. been said.
I think it was just
I
one
thought
of
you were
those...
going to say, like, a friend dragged me to ASCAT or something.
No,
like
no. I think 9/11 happened, and then, like, the drummer of Panthers dragged me to UCB finally, and I think it was, like, probably a couple weeks after I saw, like, my first Swarm show, and it was just like, oh, this is great. Why haven't I come here?
Right.
And again, I know I didn't go there. It's, like, the same reason why I lived on one street in my neighborhood, and when my now wife moved here, she was looking at an apartment one block away, and I didn't know where that street was.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, that's because I never leave my little abode. Yeah. But so, yeah, but then that didn't set enough of a fire in my butt because I didn't take a class for another half a year because I was just too scared to not be a hardcore kid and not play music.
It's funny that your first show here was a Swarm show when, like, you know, the band, The Swarm,
right.
also
exactly.
Is
that's
that
probably
why
I went. It's like, that sounds familiar to me. They're probably a hardcore band.
So,
kind of hardcore.
Huh?
The Swarm was kind of hardcore.
Yeah, they were like a hardcore band of improv.
I mean, they were straight edge in that if Delaney has more than salt water, all of his organs fail.
Right. which certainly speaks to me. I need all of my favorite people to be straight edge.
Right. So then 6 months later, you start taking class. You took an improv class?
I finally took improv class because there weren't really sketch classes. Like, I always kind of wanted to sketch. Like, when I graduated college, we went on tour, moved to New York, and then I remember we had a bootleg VHS of Mr. Show, and that was just kind of on, just like nonstop. Like, and it was just like, this is what I would like to do. Of course, like, I love Mr. Show. Why wouldn't I do this? I took some improv classes, took them very quickly in a row, took level one, level two, level three. I think my first one was probably around August of 2002. With Ari Vokaitis. And I remember it was me, Anthony Tamanik was in the class with me, Sylvia Ozels. It was great. And then I was in every class with Anthony. We took classes for the next two levels. Next one was with Seth Morris. And then the third one was with Mulaney. And those were the first, I think the Mulaney ones were the first ones at the old offices. In the two tiny rooms.
Yeah, above the Malibu Diner.
Yeah, because I remember my Seth Morris one, we didn't even have a show because there just wasn't a theater. It just happened. It was like, you guys aren't going to have a show this time. So
that's between November and February.
Yep.
It's November of 2002 to February 2003.
Yeah, because it was November 11th is when it started. It was me, Anthony King.
Veterans Day.
I believe you. it's me, Anthony King, Ked Keech, some old, and the Tamanik, again, who I always called Showtime for years. That was what his name was in my phone. I think maybe Ari called him that or someone in class, but he was always Showtime.
Yeah,
because he never shut up.
That's when the theater was shut down. So, like, there was the theater was on 22nd Street probably during your level one.
Yep.
And then in October.
Yeah, because we had I remember having a show at the old theater.
Yeah.
And the scene was me, singer of Panthers and Orchid, and Showtime, a Tamanik.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, obviously, Tamanik, like, bulldozed the entire scene.
Yeah.
But because also, I was terrible at improv. I'll just say that. Like, at the time, my plan for starting scenes was always to go out there and go, which just would give me time to think.
Yeah.
But it was always just a heightened version of Grumpy Jeff was my scene playing.
Right.
And then, there was no show because it was the in-between.
Yeah.
And then Mulaney, and then, I was just like, I'm going to barrel through classes, get on a Herald team, why not?
Sure.
But then I put a record out with Panthers called Things Are Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this is kind of the story I tell myself. For being kind of lazy,
yes.
I think. I started to go on tour a little bit more and then didn't come back for a while.
Okay.
I felt like I had dropped out of UCB, like I had dropped out of college. Because I started seeing everyone, like all of a sudden Tamanik was on like Creep and like all these other teams. And I was like, and Sylvia. And like everyone was kind of doing great. And then all of a sudden Anthony King was running the theater.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, I missed my window, and I felt like an idiot who like had dropped out of college. It would be like going back to your alma mater and just be, hey, what's up? I would never go. The only time I remember going was once to see Creep, and I remember asking Eugene Cordero to go get Anthony Tamanik out of the back room, which now I'm just like, I probably could just walk back there.
Right.
But, and I was just so anxious about it, so I never came back for a while. And then finally I started taking sketch classes here. when my now wife Christy bought me a gift certificate because she was like, "Shut up."
Yeah.
Like basically, she's like, "You're not. You keep talking about this forever. You want to take a class? Take a class." And it took her to push me into taking the classes.
Huh.
And then yeah, I took Chris Kula's first class, mm-hmm. I think first sketch class, and then took Delaney after that. Yeah.
So you were at a point where you were like, you weren't maybe weren't touring as much, and you were like, I want to get back into this.
Yeah, I was. We were touring a fair amount because like the record that came out was on a subsidiary of Atlantic. It was like on Vice Records, which is through Vice Magazine, and so like we were like, okay, we're gonna go for it a little bit more. But even then, we never completely went for like it's like every tour would kind of fall apart, and like we would go on a lot of tours. We did some European tours, like you know. But again, like I would just get stuck in my own little world. Mm-hmm. Like it was just like, I feel comfortable playing a squat in Germany.
Right.
I don't feel comfortable being at the UCB or whatever it is, like doing comedy, trying to do comedy.
Right.
So yeah, either way, it took a long time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I was just working crappy temp jobs and you know,
yeah.
And then finally when I came back, I was back.
Okay. So and, you take Kula's 101, and now you're like, I'm doing this.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, like, I still didn't have a plan, like, because there wasn't a mod team at that point. There wasn't any sort of end goal, and I was terrible at start. Like, I didn't want to, like, start a new group, like, because, like, I tried to start a sketch group once. Didn't really work exactly, and then I was just doing music. I was really into doing music, so I was like, that takes over that aspect.
It's harder to start a sketch group than it is an improv group.
Yeah.
Because there's less responsibility. It's like, show up at this time.
Yeah.
And it's okay if you're hungover.
Right. We had one out of the improv group, I remember, that was like, Atamanik was supposed to go, and then he didn't show up, and then people would show up drunk, and really it ended up being an excuse for people to kind of drink is what it felt like, and like, I didn't drink, so I was also like, oh, I'd like to write the actual sketch and get better, but it didn't really go anywhere. So yeah, I just kept taking classes. I didn't, you know, I took that. I took Delaney's 201. I just kept, you know, I took a writing for television one, writing for stage with Kula, which was Black Habanero's, Vincent Gallo's Black Habanero sketch review.
Oh yeah. So we can talk about that. So
that became a group.
Yeah.
That's you and Bassem. And,
it was me, Brandon. It was a 601 at this time, and it was a writing for stage show. And yeah, it the group was like Kula, and then they had a bunch of writer or actors, and then it was like me, Brandon Bassem, Pete Schultz, you know, writes for Weekend Update. I can't remember now who other people were, but so yeah, we kind of just it became like we did four shows, and it was Vincent Gallo's Black Habanero sketch review, which Vincent Gallo got pissed off about.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. So he found out about...
We thought it was just a funny joke to add Vincent Gallo on and list him as the caterer. Then his assistant, contacted Anthony King, who was running the theater, and was just like, what are you doing? Like, Vincent's pissed about this. And then we had to change it. So then we changed it to Ernest and Julio Gallo's Black Habanero. And then one of them died that week. So then it was just like, oops. So there was just like kind of a black mark on that.
Right. And this was it came out of a class, and you guys did a show.
Yeah,
right?
We ended up doing a spank, which at the time I didn't even know. They were just like, hey, we're going to do a spank. And I was like, cool. I don't know. Whatever. I'll just show up and do some of my sketches. Like, we like had Nick Ross involved and maybe Santangelo. I can't remember. But yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know what the hell we were doing with that. And that kind of, you know, they're kind of Bobby Chicago ended up coming out of that, which is like a sketch group. I remember distinctly on my last class show for that one at McManus with Kula. And I was like, what do I do now? And he's like, well, there's these things called mod teams starting up. Like, you know, you should apply. And I was like, okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
And then I applied. And it just happened to be that mod was starting up right when I was like, had reached the point where I couldn't take any more sketch classes. I feel like I'd done them all.
So at this point, are you feeling more like, oh, this is something that I, like, do you have a goal at this point? Or it's still just like, I'm on this wave?
I was just riding the wave. I think I was still kind of following the same viewpoint as when I was in a band.
That same sort of creature of comfort.
Yeah, and just like, you know, like I don't know if I had like an end goal in being in a punk band of making a living off it, but I just kind of kept going because it was like, well, this works right now.
Right.
You know, I went to school for film. I never followed that path completely. Like, obviously, it applies to everything I do now, but like I was going to, in theory, be an editor, and I was like, I don't really want to do that. I want to play music, and I want to do comedy. And So, yeah, I didn't have an end goal. I mean, you know, the broad end. But I'm not sure even at that point I would have ever said, like, I want to be on SNL or I want to write for SNL or do any of that. Like,
yeah.
Because also I have this stupid punk viewpoint of kind of like, don't set any lofty goals.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like it's arrogant or something?
Yeah,
or
there's
it's
an
like
arrogance to it. Because I didn't.
You're misprioritizing?
Yeah, because it's like, for like, I mean, Orchid especially was from a very, like, DIY basement punk world.
So what's
like
the line between that being pure and morally true and just and or being scared of
very
bigger things?
Very thin, honestly, and vague. And as you get older, like, it's a big thing I have to talk about in therapy and stuff. Like, of just, like, you know, what which part is my ideals and which part is just being afraid of getting older. And actually having to put myself out into the world to the possibility that people could say, like, no.
Right.
Like,
or you'll making fail. Yourself like, vulnerable.
Make yourself vulnerable. It's a huge thing.
Yeah.
And I you know, I still have that to an extent. I don't know. It's something I battle all the time.
Yeah.
It's a valid question because it's a valid question I maybe ask myself every day.
It was something for me, like, I, in college and a little too long after college, I had these ideals that I thought were like these punk ideals,
right,
you know? And then I reached a point in my life where it was like, oh, wait a minute. I just am scared and
right,
helpless and
right,
kind of screwed up. You know what I mean? And like, then it sort of became like, how do I live my life?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, because all of a sudden, yeah, all of a sudden I was 30 something and I'm still like, you know, calling myself straight edge. Like, I don't drink. Like, I'm vegetarian. Like, you know, I've got all these, like, you know, and these ideas about, like, you know, saying, you know, screw you to everything. But
right,
no one else is.
Yeah. At a certain point,
except for certain people and certain people that I'm just like, well, I don't really want to be living that life either.
Yeah.
It's a constant reevaluation. I think we all have to do it to some extent, like whatever level, you know, different worlds we come from.
And it's tricky that some people can have those points of view and those ideals, and they may be coming from a place of like, fuck you, I'm not making myself vulnerable to the world,
right,
and still be successful.
Right.
What they do.
Right.
And then, like, you see those people and you think, like, why can't I be like that?
Right. Right. Exactly.
You know?
And so, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I had any end goals, but until, you know, and then I got a mod and it was just kind of like, well, this is what I'm doing.
So let's talk about the early days of Mod Night, because you were there right from the beginning. So what was it like?
Rough.
Like, yeah, how so?
Well, Badger, the president, choking victim, and Gunderson.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Back then it was sort of like this wild frontier of like, we were all sort of figuring out.
No fixed actors.
That was the biggest problem. Yeah, the original mod teams were no fixed actors, six writers on each team.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it was that aspect of it was miserable. Like, just because, like, I don't like reaching out to people. Like, I've gotten better as I get older, but like, I think everyone like doesn't want to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And like the stress of trying to get actors for every show to be like, hey, like, you know, John Gemberling, you want to scream about the Terminator theme song? We've never met, but I'd like you to come.
That was
like
a funny sketch, by the way.
Thank you very much. But yeah, it was just, it would really stress me out. I loved the team. I loved, like, I loved the writing. I loved everyone on the team. It was me, Sean Clements, Joe Spellman, Rachel Mason, Brandon Gardner, and Dan Leaf, who I don't know where
he is. Did you
say
Sean Clements?
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Also, me and Sean Clements and Joe Spellman, all from the same hometown.
Oh.
Didn't know we were until the first day.
Hmm.
And Sean Clements, in his very Sean Clements way, was kind of like, you're from Cheshire, aren't you? And I was like, well, yep, here we go. And then we had Joe Wenger as our director for all 8 months, except for the last month where we had you.
That's right.
Will Hines.
That's right.
But it was great. I mean, except for, yeah, the heady days of, you know, scary days of no actors. It just really stressed me out. It was mm-hmm. always like kind of a scramble every month to get people.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, it was awesome because like, oh, all of a sudden I'm working with Lennon Parham, who's great, and Eugene Cordero is great, and John Gemberling is great, and like Jim Santangelo, like, is all these people are great, and like I was like psyched to be working with these people. Like I would see around and doing amazing shows.
Sure.
But I really didn't like getting people together. I would always kind of bank on other people getting people and then being like, please do this too. Mm-hmm. Please
talk about your early Mod Night sketches.
Long, bad.
What were they? Like, describe them. So there was the Terminator sketch where, like,
Terminator theme songs. See, there's a bunch I still like
me too.
Yeah.
I think about that lovingly.
Yeah. There are still, like, Terminator theme song was essentially a couple are in the subway and street musician is playing the Terminator theme song, but no one else recognizes it except for this one guy because he's playing it on saxophone.
That's right.
And it's just him screaming about facts about the Terminator. And I loved that one. I mean, that's kind of in the wheelhouse of like stuff I write. This is kind of, you know.
Yeah. Not you're so a big obscure, like horror movie, John Carpenter fan.
I'm a big genre fan. Yeah. I'm a big like kind of exploitation movie fan.
And actually, we'll get into your fanaticism of that in a minute or so.
Right, right.
But, so
and then, yeah. And, but then also I would write, like I remember I wrote one that was... I was also obsessed with temp work because I was temping nonstop. The wheel of pain in Conan, how it must be annoying to be on the same wheel of same rung with Conan, because Conan was just annoying. And so was Sean Clements in like a loincloth and Brandon Gardner in a loincloth.
Yeah.
Who looked amazing in loincloth because he's like a weightlifter. So yeah, it was just like, it would just be like, ah, the work. The pain, the struggle. It's like, yeah, I get it, Conan. We've been talking about this. Kind of using all of the wonderful traits of Sean Clements. And, yeah.
Right.
But yeah, a lot of, like, you know, there were also, like, audiences weren't consistent. We were starting to get yelled at pretty early on of, like, you got to start getting people. Because we just expected it to be a Herald, like, a, you know, Herald night. Like,
right, and it took a while to get there. Yeah.
It took a while. And I'm sure you remember it. Like, it was the same. Like, it was just, like, it sucked.
Yeah.
Like, and then, like, you know, I got yelled at by the, not yelled at, but, you know, notes from Anthony, from the, you know, AD, because of just, like, sketches that were just, like, long and meandering, not very strong, not very good, very derivative.
Right.
There were a couple of those in there, but because I was still learning. We were all kind of learning still how to write sketch, which is the beauty of mod. Like, it's still, like, when you get on mod, you're still kind of learning, and you kind of, you know, it's a big learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
But I worked real hard. I mean, I bought my first laptop so that I could still go on tour and write from the road.
Wow.
Like, I distinctly remember, I think it was, we were playing South by Southwest, and we might have been on tour with this band Big Business, who were amazing, and calling Joe Wenger from a gas station in outside of Austin, Texas, to get notes on, like, some, like, fart sketch or something. Like, while everyone else is, like, taking a leak and getting snacks, like, I'm sitting in a hot van.
Right.
Like, it's like, all right, well, your first beat needs, like, a little bit more of a oomph. Like, you know, it's a little long in the third page. And then, yeah, I remember writing Bad Company, Fudge Company.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, like, one of the first, like, UCB comedy videos. I wrote that in Houston at a club when we were on tour with High on Fire. I remember sitting, everyone else was having fun, and I was sitting by the merch table writing a sketch based on one of the other merch guys who had just randomly just been like, hey, you ever put fudge into Bad Company song titles? And I was like, hey, that's funny. Like, and I started like thinking about it and wrote Bad Company, Fudge Company. But I would just sit there and write in the van. Like, and so I was like, and that was also part of where I was like, well, this is what I am starting to care more about. Like, I'm on tour. I'm like having like playing to, you know, from three people in Iowa to like, you know, 800 people if we're opening for High on Fire, the Melvins, or, you know, someone really big playing like the Intonation Festival. But I'm sitting here thinking about writing sketch in UCB. I'm thinking about sitting at the writer's room table at 1 a.m. because it's the only time we could meet at all times.
Yeah.
Like killing myself to try to come up with something funny to make Sean Clements laugh, honestly. Because he was awesome, but also like a harsh critic, like everyone was in a good way.
Right.
But I was very happy when teams got actors. It's also the other big plus.
Sure.
Once actors got involved, it was great. You could write with them, you could work with them, and kind of get better at stuff and not kind of have that scramble, which sucked.
Yeah. What do you use to come up with ideas for sketches? Like, where do you get your ideas from?
I mean, for me, it's a little all over the place. I mean, I lately, honestly, it's just from like dumb Twitter jokes. Like, I'm just like doing a bunch of videos now that are really just like the dumbest jokes that I have on Twitter converted to video. But most of the time it comes from, you know, honestly, like watching movies or like reading books or like just like, you know, I also just I spent a lot of time not talking to people and sitting and like staring and like,
right,
you know, but the, you know, honestly, like just like kind of like at one point, a lot of it came from like, what do I not like about people? And what do I not like about myself? And still a lot of it does. I think that's a big note I give to sketch students all the time. Mm-hmm. Think about what you hate. Like, think about, there's a lot to hate in this world. But why do you hate it? We can all randomly say like, I like this. I think this is funny. I think this is dumb. But like, be smart about it and think why you actually don't like things. Mm-hmm. Like, you can use these as tools to like, say fuck you to shit. And I do that. I try to think in those terms a lot. But yeah, I think a lot of it honestly comes also just in the shower. Shower is a big one for me. Like just sitting there and standing in the shower randomly, I'll be like, oh yeah, that thing. Like I'll just like, it'll stuff will kind of pop in my brain there.
Yeah.
A lot. But movies are a big jumping off point.
Okay. So you wrote a show called Laugh Till I Died.
I laughed until I died.
Yes. And it was a sketch show with Mike Still.
Yep.
And Leslie Mizell, right? And
directed by Nate Smith.
It was just the two of them?
And me.
And you, that's right. Directed by Nate Smith.
Because I said, I got to start acting here.
Why? Why did you say that?
Because I, you know, it's one, I did always perform, even though I've got this like fear, like I performed in high school. Clearly, if I was acting in plays, like I wanted to be acting, mm-hmm. and I would think like I want to be doing stand up. But with Maude, especially, like you're very much like, and especially at the beginning, I was very much like, we have delineated roles. I am a writer. You are an actor.
Yeah.
I'm going to write. You're going to act. You can give some input, but I'm not going to go on your stage either.
Right.
Like this is your time to shine. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait a second, I'm starting to write stuff that I think I would actually say better. And that's, it kept going on. Like as Maude kept going, I'd be like, I loved everyone performing the stuff, but there would be certain things where I'd be like, I've got the rhythm. Mm-hmm. Like I know what this should be.
You know
like,
how it sounds.
Yeah. I know the musicality of this sketch and I'm not sure I'm translating that song. And it was also just like, I was like, you know, it'd be really fun. I love this team I'm on, but what if I could just work with Nate and Mike mm-hmm. and Leslie, the people I really love on this team.
Yeah.
And just have fun with them. So I kind of just like wrote I Laughed Until I Died, which was essentially a horror sketch show. It was about the horrors of life was the structure of it. And it was all based around Professor Cannibal, who was this like Tales from the Crypt style host who would guide you through this series of comic books written by Satan were all these like basically topics like how working sucks and how relationships can be terrible. Mm-hmm. And
that show had your Down by the Docks sketch in it.
Down by the Docks, yeah. Down by the Docks was essentially a monologue from Mike Still talking about the docks, the famous docks
and how the docks
worker and how the docks will break you down and the docks are a slippery whore who will tantalize you and suck you in and at the end you find out that he sells ice cream at the docks. Mm-hmm.
And that show had all the sort of sensibilities of your kind of like horror movie Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, it brought in like, you know, really being angry at stuff, weird, like not so random, but like just like pop culture reference stuff to the extent of like, here's a sketch about Ladysmith Black Mambazo.
Oh, yeah.
Like fucking Leslie Mizell.
And that was from Maude Night, that
which
sketch.
I did on Maude. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I was in that sketch.
And then Salings, obsessed with Christopher Cross.
These are all great sketches.
Thank you. And then it was really just like, it was like all these things that I kind of get obsessed with. And like, I was talking the other day about comedy, yelling. I really like yelling, like strong yelling, like in a very distinct, pointed, like wordy sort of way. It's one of the random sketch tropes that I personally enjoy.
That's also hardcore music.
Yeah, well, that is, I legitimately had that realization where I was like, I like hardcore music where they're screaming these black and white statements at you. I also like that it's sketch. I like watching Mike Still yell. And yell at people.
He's a great yeller.
I like watching
him. He's an old yeller.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, hello.
I'll show myself out.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
And I like watching him sing in a fractured English. Like I had the Innocence of a Child, which was another sketch in there. But it was kind of just like, here's everything I like. And then, like, you know, things in that, like doing the trailer for it was like one of the happiest I've ever been. Like, mm-hmm. we did a trailer for the thing that used every trope from every horror movie that I've ever loved. Like the beginning of Suspiria, the general structure of Phantasm II, the repeating of Torso, which is like a kind of random like Italian giallo from 1976.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just all these kind of
Scanner's head exploding.
Scanner's head exploding.
It's still on UCB Comedy if you want to check it out. It's a great trailer.
It's one of the things I'm happiest that I've done.
And
ever.
If you see Mike Still, make him sing The Innocence of a Child.
It's
because
a
it's so good.
One day we'll record it and make a video out of it when we're in the same town.
There's so many things I want to ask you about. One thing, you've done music and you've written a lot of songs and you've done comedy. Like, what's the crossover there? Like, do you feel like there's a similar kind of approach to writing sketches that there is to writing songs? Because you've talked about, like, this is what reminded me of it when you talked about, like, I know the rhythm and the musicality of this sketch. Like, do you think about them in the same way?
I do. I mean, I think there's a rhythm to... I think there's a rhythm and a musicality to sketch writing, and especially to dialogue writing. I just think like it's kind of really listening to who we are as people and like how people talk, like but starting to figure out like what are these funny, like why do we laugh at the way certain people talk, like why do we laugh at the all these people, like certain random people that we know who are like everything they say is funny, but figuring out why we think that it's funny. And a big chunk of that for me is just figuring out what that rhythm is and like figuring out, you know, like what works for this sort of thing. And it's like a big, like I when I say it to my students, I'm not sure it, I'm trying to figure out how to translate it as best as I can, because in some ways I'm just like, you'll get it when you get it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like learning this muscle memory, also in some ways with sketch writing. But, listening to the joke, like listening to the joke. I mean, joke writing itself is a rhythm based thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's just no, and like, I'm also, you know, come from playing grindcore music. Like, it's all like 30-second songs. So it's like knowing like this is a part that should be this long, but this is something that should be an epic.
Right.
Like, it's like knowing this set of riffs should be a Pig Destroyer song, but this set of riffs should be a Genesis song. Like, this should be old school Genesis. That's like, you know, the Great Giant Hogweed should be like 11 minutes, but, you know, Slayer Girls by Pig Destroyer Book Burner should be 30 seconds. Like,
right.
it's listening to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I answered that completely.
No, you did. Yeah. Sometimes I think about like sketch comedy or even improv scenes being like, here's the verse, here's the chorus of the scene, here's the next verse, here's the chorus.
This is the bridge.
Yeah.
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 Definitely. I think it kind of in those terms all the time, I guess. It's just how my brain works.
What, tell me, I have a slightly off-topic question.
I would love it.
Kind of. Can you tell me the definition of these musical genres? Grindcore, hardcore, and punk.
Okay.
And they overlap, I know, but like, how do you...
Yeah, they all kind of overlap. So punk's the broadest term.
Right.
And punk is just kind of, you know... Depending on where
do that one last. What's grindcore?
All right, grindcore is essentially even grindcore you can start to break into subcategories.
Yeah.
So I'll give the biggest grindcore is essentially. Some people call it fast hardcore. But it's very fast riffs based around a blast beat, and a blast beat is when you know on the snare drum you're just going like da 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 da, like 180 BPMs usually.
Okay.
You know it can kind of vary.
What
depending.
Aesthetic goes with it? Is it like skulls and cloaks or what?
It depends, like in Orchid terms, like in like the when we did it, which was kind of another subgenre called power violence, or it's kind of in a power violence world but not really was Orchid. There is a lot of skull imagery, but if you get into like more of the political like punkier side of grindcore, it's a lot, it's almost close to like crust punk, like uber political,
right?
Like
okay.
You know, dumpster dive in like sort of aesthetic.
Yeah.
A lot in the
lots
terms
of patches.
Of like, yeah, a lot of patches, butt flaps, terrible collages. If you're Dystopia, which is an amazing, terrible power violence band, a lot of weird graffiti font.
Right. Grindcore bands. Orchid? Sort of.
Orchid. Yeah, I don't know. Orchid. Well, Orchid.
Don't speak like a connoisseur who's going to be accountable to the other musicians you argue with.
Orchid has
forever.
Some grindcore.
Ultimate
like first paragraph of the Wikipedia.
Ultimate Warrior.
Grindcore bands. Oh. Napalm Death.
Oh, yeah.
Like Terrorizer. New ones like Pig Destroyer. Mm-hmm.
Would you say that everybody who everyone who fronts a grindcore band was once a kid who loved drawing cars?
No, not at all. They would probably hate those kinds of people. Locust.
What would they like as
Locust
an elementary
has some grindcore stuff in there, but they also were in Power Violence World, too.
Ultimate Warriors.
Ultimate Warriors definitely were an old grindcore band. Extreme Noise Terror was an old classic one.
See, but why are so many of the names like so alpha and violent? They just sound like bullies to me. They probably were anti-bullies, right? They're probably like very
It depends. It's
they
really,
sound a lot like We Got Big Dicks, really, is what the names of those bands sound
grindcore
like.
Grindcore is a lot less We've Got Big Dicks. Like, but it also can, you can get into porno grind, like, which is a terrible subgenre.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I guess, you know, I mostly think of like Power Violence stuff, which is just a kind of like, it was a jokey term given to a bunch of West Coast like hardcore guys playing fast hardcore. Like this band, Infest. Infest are an amazing fast hardcore band. They're reuniting. I'm going to see them in May. Man is the Bastard is one of the best bands ever.
Yes.
And they are Power Violence. And they're hardly even fast. They're two bass players. It's kind of proggy and weird.
See, I would want to do a sketch where you're marrying my daughter and we're at Thanksgiving and I'm just asking you about this. And you go on long tangents where you list all these things.
Weirdly, there's a bunch, like, there's a lot of that kind of shit like I haven't tapped into. And I should have. Yeah. Like,
here's my other question.
Man is a Bastard is so great.
Hardcore is a faster version of punk, essentially.
It's in between those two?
Faster, harder version of punk.
Okay.
And, you know, that was like Black Flag, Minor Threat.
Oh, okay. Those I know.
Yeah, coming out of punk. And punk, you know, did it start in America in the 70s with the Stooges? In some ways, and kind of MC5 in some ways, and Death, or you know, and then moved in the Ramones, and then moved over to, you know, basically it's just when you look at the history, it's just like all history music, it's this back and forth between England and America,
yeah,
of just like you take this, and then we'll do this, and then you'll do this, and then we'll do this, because like hardcore, Napalm Death was probably one of the first hardcore bands, but before that, you can say Siege and Deep Wound, who were both Boston bands, and Deep Wound was Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr.'s first hardcore band that he played drums in with Lou Barlow on bass.
Mm-hmm.
And Deep Wound was a big influence on Napalm Death, who are essentially the beginning of grindcore and Carcass in Birmingham, England.
Everything you're saying to me is hilarious.
It's great. I can go for hours, and that's the scary part.
Like the fact that like your face kind of flitted, and you went, oh, and Carcass.
Yes. Carcass is a mind-blowing band.
And then Frusciante sips in is like, what, Man?
Man is the Bastard.
Man is the Bastard.
So good.
Who are now Bastard Noise, because they also do noise projects and then became Bastard Noise.
Yeah.
What do you do a sketch where you just list hyphenated genres?
I can keep, because I can go for hours. And that's the scary part, and that's where I get scared. Like, I can do that for just metal and then hardcore, but then I can then start going into prog rock and kraut rock and, like, it wears everyone out. If you give me a second, I'll just keep going and going and going, which is why
I challenge you not getting a room. We'll see if I get tired of that. We'll see how far that goes.
You enjoyed watching me talk about Magma.
I did.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Everyone should listen to Magma.
Yeah.
Right.
Mechanic Destructo Commando.
There was also, I completely forgot to bring this up, but you also did a great and weird and hilarious and absurd show with Emily Strawn.
Right.
What was the name of that show
Getting
again?
Quaid.
That's it.
Yeah.
I can't believe I couldn't remember that.
Me
did you
either.
See that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
Great show.
Yeah. Getting Quaid
so weird.
Was a weird
Emily's
half hour.
A genius. Emily's a real weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is not weird. She's a very nice person. Her sense of humor is very strange and great.
Emily's the best. Emily was like one of the beauties of Maud. Like for me, like of like what Maud should be, where it's like I was just like, you know, we were put on a team together and kind of immediately we were both like, oh, right. We're in the same like wheelhouse, like we know what we're taught, like we like the same stuff and make each other laugh while no one else is laughing.
Getting Quaid was like a perfect incarnation of the two of you's sensibility,
right?
And like it was a perfect like realization.
I think Getting Quaid might be the thing I'm like most proud of, like I think it was just like the like everything about it I love, which was essentially me and Emily playing dumber heightened versions of ourselves trying to get to a Randy Quaid fan convention.
It was so like structurally it was so good. It was a great idea. Like it was so silly.
Right.
It was really funny.
I think it was a big thing for me too, because like I'm very serious and very like cranky, and a good friend of mine had passed away, and it was a big thing. Like this guy Jerry Fuchs, who was this amazing guy, amazing drummer, an amazing guy. But it was a big thing because I was like, I want to write something silly. Everything's so heady with me. And then Emily like gave me like the keys to that castle to be like, let's just throw in every dumb joke that makes us laugh, and then like think about the justification after, and have the justification even if it's just we're dumb. But it really was, at the end of the day, was like the best thing. I was so happy with that.
Yeah.
I hope it comes back in some form at some point in our lives.
Right. You've also, with Laugh Till I Died, you've had experience. You and Nate have been pitching that, or had been pitching that around to networks.
Yeah, yeah. Right? We've converted into like a cartoon, and we're still trying to kind of, one day it'll get made.
So talk about the process of that. What is that like? Like what, for people who might be wondering like how you go about that or what the process of that is like, speak to that.
I mean, that was like a real kind of trial by fire of like turning it into like taking this idea of something and turning it into like a full cartoon. Mm-hmm. Cause that was the idea, is like take Professor Cannibal. We both come from film backgrounds, but neither of us had written like a TV script. So really it was just like kind of like asking it, like, I don't know. We were really picky about like really like every word being right. And like really like thinking like, what are the aspects of this show we like? And what are the aspects of this show we like? Mm-hmm. And really like, I don't know, it took a long time. Mm-hmm. And now I feel like, you know, it's finding that rhythm, and now we're at a, like, I think I would be at a point it's much easier to kind of write, but it's just, it's a different thing. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I still had in my brain the same rule I got from Sketch 201, from Delaney, where Delaney would just be like, watch any comedy movie. Like, just break down the scene and just be like, there you go. There's one game to this thing. And kind of just, like, taking the rules of sketch and being like, all right, we're playing with this one scene. This is one section where we're trying to get this information across. But also, what's the one game we're playing here? Right. What's the one funny thing in this section of it?
Yeah.
You know, is it that Professor Cannibal masturbates to devil porn? Like, sure, that's what that thing is, like, right, for this time period. I don't know. For me, it's a hard thing to completely say, but it's applying all the same rules that I use and teach for writing, mm-hmm, to individual scenes, I guess. It's hard though.
Yeah.
Writing long, as you know, like writing in longer form is hard.
Yeah.
Very hard. And it's daunting.
And, what's the experience like? What was the experience like of pitching this to networks, of having those meetings?
Good. And it feels good to pitch. And then also feels like, was there any point to that?
Right.
In some ways it's really like, you know, it feels like a breaking you down experience, because it's just, you know, you're basically working on this, you know, spec script, like this thing that possibly will never go anywhere, and hoping to talk to people, you know. And I remember talking to one guy, I'm not going to talk about from where, but like it was like halfway through and he was like, yeah, okay, I get it. And I was like, oh, all right, well, that was miserable. And I don't want to be here anymore. Right. And I want to leave the room immediately. But it's really hard. It's really hard to pitch why something is good and why they should give you lots of money. I clearly haven't figured out that answer completely yet. Mm-hmm. It's a stress that I have almost every day of my life. But it's very stressful.
You and your wife have been together a long time, right?
Yeah.
Even like before you're married, you guys were together for a while.
We've been married for like a year, but we've been together for 11 years. And I knew her. She was one of my best friends for like 4 or 5 years before that, probably.
And she's not a performer or musician, is she?
No, she's a teacher. She used to work for Columbia University for the reading writing program for Teachers College, and now teaches kindergarten. She's one of probably the funniest person I know.
Yeah,
but she doesn't do any performing. She never has. Like, she was always into music and stuff, but never.
How does it work when since you went through periods where you're gone a lot, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And then when you're doing sketch stuff, it's like late nights. You know, if she's working a day job.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're doing like night stuff.
Yeah.
And then also you're doing stuff that probably causes a lot of narcissistic insecurity. Not necessarily, narcissistic, too judgmental word, but like requires you to like navel gaze and to kind of be into your own shit.
Yeah.
To get stuff
done. I think I have that tendency way too much anyways, doesn't
how do you
help.
Make it, how does that, how do you guys?
She's the best. Honestly, is one of the best, is one of the reasons. Like, she is the best. I don't know. Like, I, you know, when she's gone for like 4 days, I fall apart and I become like a hobo. Like, yeah. From the supermarket and terrible iced tea, like that's all chemicals, like, and I have to like report back, just like, I ate a vegetable today, because I just like fall apart. Like, I don't know why. Like, so I don't know, the fact that like I would be gone for like 5 weeks at a time, I think speaks a lot to her and how kind of just like awesome she is. She's really unbelievably understanding, completely. Like, and at the same time, it is hard. Like, it's, you know, it, on my end, I probably have to get too much justification from her of just like, I'm not wasting my day today, right? Because I'm sure it's a fear we all have. I have a constant fear that this is a glorified hobby. Right. Even that I'm like basically like making a living off it in some ways, like it feels like a glorified hobby because I'm also taking from years of being in a band where I was like, I think I might be lying to myself a little bit mm-hmm. because I'm also playing in a punk world that's never going to go anywhere. But it's so, you know, like she's just really under, you know, at the same time, there are days where it's just like, she's worked all day and she would love to just sit on the couch and watch TV. And I'm, you know, like I have to like fight to be like, you know, I don't know if I deserve to do that.
Huh.
And also realize some days I do deserve to do that, that right. I should, you know, I should just be able to relax because I did work or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is very hard. I mean, I think honestly a big thing is therapy, helping both of us to be better people
mm-hmm.
And to deal with all of the issues of both her family and my family and these terrible minds that at least I know I have.
Right.
Yeah,
I pulled back the reins on talking about therapy and that kind of stuff with you.
Yeah.
Because you and I could spend 2 hours.
Right. It's hard. I mean, and it's, you know, I think it's on my end, it's also being self-conscious that she doesn't want to hear it all the time. Like,
sure.
Because also she went through years of it with Panthers, like of just like, you're miserable. Like, I can't hear about Panthers anymore. Just me complaining and being like, we're not practicing enough. We're not doing this. This band got this thing. This, you know, why isn't this record coming out? And a lot of heartache in that band. And so like, you know. I don't want to say it's just her, but I know it's both of us, but I really think she's just like the best person in the world mm-hmm. is why it works.
Yeah.
It has to be a certain type of personality because we're both on the same page. I think we're both willing to help each other get better is the main thing. And we're each other's biggest fans. Like I'm so like unbelievably proud of her. Like she's like written a book like that just came out and like another book's coming out. And she's got another book all in like teaching stuff. Like I don't know what it means. I like look at it, I don't get it, but like I think she's like, yeah, I think it's just two people thinking each other are really great and that person not thinking they are and trying to get better at it. It's very hard. I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to start wrapping this up. Mm-hmm. I want to say that you have a podcast called Worst Gig Ever.
Yep, Worst Gig Ever.
That people should listen to.
Yeah, you can get it on iTunes or Worst Gig Ever Podcasts. You shall be on it soon.
I hope so.
Will Hines has been on it.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. Saifa, if you want to come on, you can come.
Oh, yeah. Saifa probably got some great worst gig ever.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, man. Not in front of us.
We'll talk later.
We won't give you a promotion, so you quit.
Oh, man.
Sounds like most of...
humiliating.
Yeah. But yeah, Worst Gig Ever. It's talking to comedians and musicians about how bad shows, bad auditions, how terrible it is to be a comedian and a musician, basically.
Yeah. Also, we're going to go see Nine Inch Nails next year.
Yes.
Right?
Very excited. God bless that he's back, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to go Google a lot of the words.
Right? I love him.
Did you watch that? I watched it last night. Did you watch that thing with Dave Grohl and Josh Homme and him for the Sound City thing?
I heard the song, but
it's
I haven't watched
great.
It yet.
The song's great.
A little behind. The song is amazing. The
song's really great.
It sounds like a Trent Reznor song
it really sounds
finished.
Like him. Like, yeah. Because also it's like,
it sounds like
Dave Grohl playing drums over Trent Reznor's thing. And because also Josh Homme's playing bass.
Yeah.
And it's mixed really low, so you can
It sounds
kind
like
of
he
not.
Had that song sitting around and he was like, why don't you guys
I'll take the reins on this one. I was like, all right, Trent, Jesus Christ.
Were we going to say Saifa? But Nine Inch Nails?
Oh, I heard you talk about Nine Inch Nails in our 101 class. But like,
of
I could tell
I
you were like a big fan.
Oh yeah.
And then I remember a couple months ago, it was a show. I don't remember what it was, and something about Nine Inch Nails came up, and whoever was in the scene had no idea.
Oh no!
I saw you itching on the back line, like.
I do remember this.
You tagged
them
out. You said one word, and someone sweeped the scene, and your face was like. No!
I do remember that. I do remember that.
I'll say that type of living might be one of the biggest issues students might have with me as a teacher is I've gotten multiple times students being like, I literally don't know anything that you are ever talking about.
That's what
from my references to music, my references to movies, my references to like my weird knowledge of every weird sketch.
They don't get your Dario Argento references?
No, and that's what I do. It. That's part of I have
that's
to like...
That's your most mainstream one.
Yeah.
For me, you were talking about Dario Argento as like Billy Joel references.
Right.
That's like the most mainstream you get.
I use Dario as an example, though, of making sure you're not just writing a sketch for Dario Argento fans. Like, yeah, because I'll be like, do you guys know what giallos are? No, so that's why I don't write sketches about giallos. So,
yeah, right.
Because right. I try to make myself a little bit more accessible.
Right.
It's part of my charm.
Tell people, before we wrap this up, tell people five bands that they should listen to.
Oh, I mean, Black Sabbath is the best band that's ever existed, but...
Okay, that's ridiculous. The
best band that's ever existed, and we can get into
Have
a long...
Have you heard of the Beatles? What are you talking about?
I think the Beatles are boring, and I don't ever like the Beatles when I listen to them. We can talk for hours about this.
Shit. I'm going to have to separate you two.
It's fun.
I mean, you sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
You sound like you stopped talking English.
Yeah. I can go through Beatles albums and be like, I like these three songs, and then the rest I can never listen to again and be happy.
Do you like any music?
Yeah.
Then you're full of shit.
I don't buy... I've never really completely bought into that whole, like, I've got to really like them because they're the roots of it all. Like, maybe, like, everyone got it better after them. That's what I say. But... And then when I list off...
But you like Black Sabbath?
Black Sabbath are the best band that's ever existed. But all the bands, too, that I'll say after every one, you can give me that look and be like, what are you talking about? You just fucked
up the
Beatles. Okay,
so Black Sabbath?
Old Genesis. Old Genesis
right,
is one
now,
of the best
you're talking
bands
about,
ever.
Like, the Peter Gabriel first couple of albums, Genesis.
Like,
right?
Albums, like, with seven sides and, like,
yeah,
one track.
I'm talking all of the Peter Gabriel records, but also... At least 3 to 4, if not 5, of the Phil Collins records.
Huh.
Trick of a Tale is a great record.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to get into like Abacab. Like I can get into
that's
like
a great one.
If only the White Album had been as good as Abacab.
Abacab. if the White Album was like 1/4 of the length, maybe it could have been.
Oh, Abacab. Wasn't Abacab a double album?
No. Abacab's a single.
Oh, okay.
That's right. Really started really good.
Okay, so Old Genesis. So Black Sabbath, Old Genesis.
Yeah. At the Gate, Slaughter of the Soul, Magma. Mm-hmm. Magma's Mechanic Destructa Commando, that album.
Is At the Gates a band?
At the Gates is a Swedish death metal band.
Okay, and Slaughter of the Soul, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then also, right now, what will I say? Entombed Left Hand Path.
Okay.
One of the first new old Swedish death metal bands.
Entombed is the band.
Yes.
Yes.
Entombed is the band. Left Hand Path is their first record. I'm going off of kind of what I've been listening to a lot.
Right. Right.
Or all of Tangerine Dream's discography.
All right. So we
guys did the soundtrack
for
Risky 50
Business. More slots that I can say bad names.
And now
it's okay with me if you don't like the Beatles.
We're gonna...
saying they're boring is actually a criticism I can accept because it's subjective. So your experience is your experience. I don't like when people say they're not good. That's weird.
No, yeah. I don't think they're not good. I just, I mean, also it's just I can never listen to most of them ever again because I've just heard them all too. Like I just don't even.
That's
I can go for a long time.
If I was your therapist, we would never get beyond this point.
Sure.
I'd be like, well, this is why you're not happy. You got to listen to Rubber Soul 100 times.
I mean, it's also, it's I know what buttons to push.
Yeah.
So it's the same as the Ramones.
You're right. I was just going to say, I've warmed to the Ramones, but
I'm still pretty indifferent towards, that's my main argument. Like, cool, whatever.
Right. Like, there's,
I understand that more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm more of a, like.
But I know when to say that. Like, if Jake Fogelnest is in the room, start shit talking on the Ramones and get, like, his head to explode.
I don't know about this!
So.
All right. We have to go. Jeff, this is great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jeff.
Having me. Will, thank you.
Thank you, John.
For maintaining your composure during that Beatles episode.
I mean, that was some shit right there. Thank you, Sypha.
Sypha, thank you. We will review your, we'll re-review your application.
Your promotion.
If you could.
And thank you, Keaton Patty.
Keaton Patty, thank you very much. And thank you to you, the listener.
Good. Good one.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
of contagion, the violence of offense, but it's true. That mass of reason, of all the pleasures of all.